Top Chef season 13 is over for good, I think. Oh my gosh, we have a lot to talk about. We're so angry, or we're happy, I don't know. This is the Judges Table Podcast here on Rob Has a Website, Reality Rehap-Ups. We've been talking all year about Top Chef. I am Antonio Mazzaro. I'm joined by three co-hosts who probably are varying shades of red or angry right now. I don't know. Maybe whoever is the angriest about this outcome, speak up first. Who's most angry? Nobody. Wow.
It's me, Josh Wiggler.
Oh, sorry. The secret, Josh, is that you're always angry. Is that right?
That's my secret, Cap.
Oh, that's great. Josh Wiggler is back.
That's how I punch alien serpents in the face and save New York City.
Yes, and it is also how you process Top Chef finales.
Yes, correct.
What's going on, Josh? Who else is with us?
That's
who
my else contribution is with us? For the podcast.
Yes, yes.
I mean, I won't say I'm angry as much as I'm a little underwhelmed, as underdone as Jeremy's duck was. That's how I feel about this finale.
Wow, that's Mike Bloom making a food pun. Kurt Clark, are you in the house?
I'm okay with it. I think even in the last episode, I was saying how I was actually warming up to Jeremy a bit in terms of being okay with him as a winner. But I'm still going to put out there that I think we have definitively seen that sometimes the first winner is also the first loser.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Zing. Put that on a t-shirt. Man, no fear, Kurt Clark.
No fear, Kurt Clark. Oh, is it a no fear t-shirt?
Of course it is. Yes, that's why I said that.
Yes, with that little cartoon face.
Yeah, that's already on a t-shirt, I think.
Yep, that's absolutely why I said that.
Listen, before we burn Jeremy to the ground, which I assume is going to be a decent amount of this podcast, I will just say congratulations, Taco Dude. Congratulations, Frat Dad. You are the Top Chef. Good for you. Nothing can take that away. Congratulations.
Yeah, and we've all eaten his food, so we know from whence we speak. We know his food, and so we... No, of course we don't. We don't know anything about his food. We only know, by the way, what the show has presented to us. So if they wanted him to look like a better winner, they probably could have made it so that he looked like a better winner. Am I right?
Well, I would say that, but at the same time, I do feel like in the finale... They really crapped all over Amar, in my opinion. They showed Amar to be a giant douche, whereas Jeremy, who's been shown as a giant douche for the past few weeks, was actually given a pretty sympathetic edit. So, again, we talked last week about how we weren't sure as to where the editors want us to lie on Jeremy, but I can say at the end of this, looking back at an entire 15 episodes, I think that they wanted us to skew positive towards Jeremy overall, considering that the final note that we have in this song is that Jeremy is triumphant and he hasn't talked crap about anybody else, whereas Amar is throwing shade at Jeremy the entire time and then gets flustered because, you know, someone from his past comes back that he didn't really leave things well off
with. A ghost. Yeah, I think that's true. Josh, you have something to say here?
Yeah, I mean, I didn't think that Amar looked like too much of a scumbag, but his mentor was saying Amar's a scumbag. So, you know, when you're bringing your mentors in to help you out, and that's the position of the mentor that is coming in to help you out, you're off on the wrong foot. But no, I think could the show have done more to portray Jeremy as a better winner? I don't think that you can hide some of the mistakes that he made along the way. I don't think you can undouchify his concept for Taco Dad or Taco Dude or whatever the hell that was. Like, I think that there's just some things where Jeremy's going to Jeremy. But you know, he ends up here in the final two, he ends up winning. And I think that it's, you know, maybe it could have been worse. Like, they could have, you know, maybe it's not quite a warts and all. Like, maybe there were more warts that they covered up is a possible thing. I think that there's just some things, there's some blemishes along the way that you just would not be able to hide. But also, he's got an impressive challenge record that speaks for itself and yada, yada, yada. So what are you going to do?
Well, we talked a lot about that last week. Josh, you weren't with us. If anyone's joining us...
I was in the Pasta Mama Forest.
You were in the Pasta Mama Forest. I can't believe you made it out. This is the sequel to this film.
I had second thoughts.
This is good. But if anyone's...
The rigatoni was apparently not that sharp. It did not pierce the skin.
No. A little al dente, though, I will say.
The rigatonio. That's fantastic. I'm glad you made it back, Josh. I really am, personally.
Me too.
I don't know. I don't want to speak for everybody, but I'm very happy. But yeah, we talked a lot last week about this, about the edit of Jeremy, about how Top Chef, we give a lot of credit to Top Chef for the edit throughout the season, not always telegraphing things and not being as clear as other shows. Kurt, are you on board with this ultimate edit of Jeremy, warts and all, that we've seen throughout the season?
Well, I'm on board with the fact that it was inconsistent. I know we've gotten a lot of comments and questions on Twitter just about the finale in general. And Mel God Serve asked us, was this the most obvious winner's edit you've ever seen? And I think there's a little bit of assumptiveness to that question, because I don't think it was at all obvious. I think that he, more than any other winner, other than maybe Nicholas, who I was team Nicholas, obviously, was kind of painted, like you just said, as not necessarily always in the brightest light, a little strong-headed at times, douchey has been used. So I didn't think that this was necessarily an obvious winner's edit until, as Mike had called out, we kind of got this edit of Amar completely out of nowhere. And maybe it's just the fact that his mentor came out of the woodwork for this last challenge, but we really didn't get to see this side of Amar. I mean, I actually, without that part of Amar's history coming out, I would have thought, you know, all the times that we've seen Amar say, "I came to cook, not to create crudo or to put, you know, uncooked things on a plate." I actually went into this thinking that Amar had a great chance of winning against Jeremy.
Yeah, let me set that up for those. I know there are some who don't watch the show but listen to this podcast. And first of all, that's you. Thank you very much. But for those of you who don't, for those of you who are subscribed, as you can always do at robhasawebsite.com/RHAPUPS to get all our podcasts about Top Chef. You've known that this season we've been talking a lot about, as we've said, about the edit, about what we think about Jeremy and Amar. And what's really going on with Jeremy here? And I think there's a lot to be said about, do we want a winner with three dimensions? Do we want a winner who's a hero, a villain, or do we want a three-dimensional winner, warts and all, who we've seen kind of the highs and lows? And Kurt, you're talking about Nicholas, who was a winner that he was on the bottom. So we even saw some bad food from Nicholas. But I think Hosea is another winner who we have seen some really negative spots from. Mike, I know you're going to get us later in this podcast into a winner's ranking, but am I tracking that correctly, that Jeremy is closer to Hosea maybe, although I don't think he's full Hosea. He's closer to Hosea than he's not.
I would say, actually, so of looking at all the winners, the number of times that they finished on the bottom, I do think if we're ranking purely based on that, Jeremy is near the bottom. He was in the bottom three times. Hosea and Kevin and actually Nicholas all finished in the bottom more times than him. But someone that finished actually with an equal number of bottom finishes as Jeremy is Hung. And I think it actually segues really nicely into, I think when you ask this question about heroes and villains and three-dimensional characters, if you look back on it, actually, there are a lot more winners that are represented as three-dimensional characters than you think. And that's one thing that I really loved about the show, is that these people are not usually being given these sort of polarizing edits that you might see on shows like The Survivor or The Amazing Race or Big Brother. It's a lot more nuanced than that. Even we talked about this last week. Look at someone like May. For a while, May was being shown as someone who was kind of bitchy, for lack of a better term, someone who was, you know, very deadpan. And then we get this whole family backstory and we start to color her edit a little bit more. Hung was very similar. He came in very hot-headed and, you know, very contentious. And then people learned to love him later on. So I think one of the things about Jeremy is that I really appreciate his three-dimensional edit, and I'm not unhappy that he was being shown as warts and all. I just think personally, I don't jibe with that type of personality. I think anybody out there who knows all four of us know that none of us probably jibe very well with the dude bro mentality. And I think that's led to our sort of collective dislike of Jeremy overall. I think on paper, which we'll talk about later on, he's a fantastic chef, but what sort of sours the taste in my mouth a little bit, and not, you know, like a Honeyball sour taste, but sours the taste in my mouth a little bit, is that it's just, he just doesn't have a personality that I would enjoy hanging out with personally.
Yeah. Well, it's a good thing it's not top Mike Bloom's friends competition.
That's coming in the off season on Bravo.
Oh my gosh. It sounds like a Bravo show for sure.
Oh my God. Those elves are really at hard at work on that show.
I would love to see that for sure. Mike,
was that a Woody Woodpecker laugh? Cause that was
I was just going to say,
it was kind of the magical elves, the happy little elves laugh, like, you know, the sound sting. So there you go.
Nice. Love it.
Well, that would probably be one of my challenges, though. It'd be like, okay, imitate a cartoon character just to entertain me.
I did like the woodpecker-esque laugh. I thought that was good.
I could actually see me wanting, like, I would actually like to grab a beer with Jeremy. Like, I think that would actually be fun. He'd be engaging. He wouldn't withdraw into himself. So I'm like kind of the flip side of the Bloom coin. I could see me enjoying having a drink with our winner.
Well, it is very interesting, because I think, Mike, you sort of called it out, and Kurt, you've said you didn't necessarily kind of ping the negative edit or feel this way until the finale. Setting this up, what we have is, we have a finale where, pretty much like other finales, they have to just cook very straightforward. The only real restriction they're given is that they have to feature an ingredient, like a key ingredient in each dish. So each dish has to really be based around one key or featured ingredient. And that's the ingredient that has to shine through. That's what the dish needs to be centered around. And that's what they have to do with each of the four courses they have. This is sort of set up by Tom Colicchio cooking a full meal for the first time in show history for the two of them in the morning. What do you guys think about Tom cooking that breakfast for them? Or that
I guess
that
awesome.
Four-course lunch. Yeah, that was awesome, right? Yeah. Talk about a chef's table.
That was really great. I had to scratch my head for a second because I was like, this is the first time he's ever cooked on the show. Wasn't there that time where he did like the quick fire thing? But I guess he wasn't cooking there, right? It was him just doing a lot of prep.
I guess if you could go boil it down to semantics, he was cooking a dish there, whereas here he's actually cooking like a meal.
He cooked four
courses for them, as opposed to like, here, let me show you how I cook this dish. Look how great I am. Okay, you do it too.
Yep, that's where I
do. This is Emeril's job. This is in my rider that I don't have to cook meals for the contestants. That's a Lagasse joint. So it was his first time doing that. It was really awesome. The food looked fantastic. I've eaten at Colicchio's restaurants here in New York a couple of times, and they are incredible. Kraft is a ridiculous, ridiculous restaurant. So I got to imagine that was fantastic for those guys to kick off finale day. That's a hell of a way to start.
Which Kraft?
Did you see Kwame in the kitchen while you were at Kraft?
Yeah. No, but I was having hallucinations of Pasta Mama, maybe visions of the future.
Oh dear.
Yeah, it was Pasta Tama.
Pasta Tama. Yeah.
Oh boy. That's a better hashtag option than hung bottom finishes. So we're gonna go with that for sure.
We've got a long time to go. Jot that down.
I'm gonna keep that one in the old memory bank. Yeah.
I don't want you to keep that in any bank, Mike. Let's just make a withdrawal for sure. But
the bank is full of Bloom coins, so we know it's very dirty.
I can't wait to see who wants to be Mike Bloom's friend on Bravo. This is gonna be so great. There's gonna be Bloom coins, cartoon character impressions. This is gonna be a great show.
I think that it's going to be called Business is Blooming, and it's going to be about Mike Bloom matchmaking friendships.
This is such a great show.
Wait, friendships with me or friendships with other people?
We should honestly stop recording this podcast.
With other people, but it will also be, you will be supported by your friends. They will be your co-matchmakers.
Or maybe it'll be like Millionaire Matchmaker, where like I'm making the matches, but at the same time I have my own little sideline story of like, will I ever find a friend?
Exactly. Yeah, that's great. Yeah, you're the Patty of the show.
The Bloom Chiller. I don't want any part of this. This is going to be a nightmare. But I think Andy Cohen will be great, Mike, for the after show.
Oh, absolutely. We're going to be doing so many shot skis, I won't be able to see when I walk out of the studio.
Anybody want to talk about the food specifically that Tom prepped? Anyone want to highlight anything? I thought the roasted squab looked great.
That looked really good.
I like the potato pasta looked really good. And sort of the Wagyu beef. I'm a beef person in particular. And so that looked really good to me.
Yeah, that looked like the teppanyaki that I was talking about a few weeks ago. Like that was what I was what I saw in Japan, and that was some serious business. And that Tom is making that, you gotta imagine that tastes real, real good.
Yeah, I like to take note of which dish, like either in a competition or created by like one person, I would be most interested in. It was definitely the Wagyu beef, followed by the crab and sea urchin in the first course.
Well, I thought it was, I don't know, I don't want to use the word interesting because that's a very overused word, but I thought it was a little perhaps on the nose that what happened is that Tom makes for Amar and Jeremy a dish where he combines, he uses crab and sea urchin with finger limes. Okay, so the finger limes were the key ingredient to set off the seafood flavors. Later on in the final cook-off, Amar cooks a risotto dish, and in his risotto, it's a seafood risotto with finger limes, by the way. So I thought, I don't know, is Amar drawing inspiration from Tom, mixing the seafood and finger lime flavors? Tom highlighted the finger lime flavors of Amar's seafood risotto as very good, but didn't say, I served him that yesterday. So it might not have been as close in actual prep or practice as it seemed coming up. It's just two finger lime with seafood appearances in the same episode. Thought that was very kind of on the nose, or I wasn't sure if Amar was trying to play on that. The show didn't really feature it. So that was my only real takeaway, other than those guys had a baller ass meal. And I guess they deserved it, right? They made it all the way to the finale of Top Chef. Really cool experience for the two of them. And that was fun. They then get to the next day while they're cooking, draft their sous chefs. Guys, we love drafts, right?
But drafts are fun.
Can anyone explain how this one played out? It was a little odd.
Well, yeah. So they basically got to each choose two eliminated chefs to use as sous chefs, which have happened to middling effects in the past. I believe I actually erroneously mentioned the season. I believe it was actually season 5 where they were like given sous chefs and one of them was a former Top Chef contestant or winner. Whereas here it's sort of trended towards just pick previously eliminated contestants. And there was some strategy going on here. So first, Amar picks Kwame. Jeremy Kwame bromance was actually pretty understated this season, in my opinion, to the point of where in Jeremy's exit interview with Entertainment Weekly, he talks about how like Kwame is by far the person he's kept in touch with the most from this season. They visit each other's restaurants constantly. But Amar did that to make sure that, you know, Jeremy won with Kwame last challenge. They work very well together. He wants to make sure that, you know, he doesn't have his sidecar on his motorcycle. And then Jeremy goes with Carl, which I'm sure made Kurt squee a little bit.
Do you think that when they're traveling around, when Jeremy is going to restaurants with Kwame, that Kwame is in the sidecar of the motorcycle?
Absolutely. I want to imagine them wearing like little helmets with their initials on it.
I think Kwame's driving and Jeremy's in the sidecar, but carry on.
Sure. Amar picks Marjorie, which I'm sure made Josh squee. And he does it rather smartly because he wants to do desserts and he wants to make bread and he feels like she's the most utilized. And I actually was surprised that Jeremy picked Carl above Marjorie just because that's such a utilized skill. Jeremy picks Angelina. Which, you know, doesn't pay off for him in any sort of negative way. And I believe this was the second time that she's been chosen kind of out of nowhere specifically for her prep skills. I guess it works out for her, though. I question that a little bit because I assume that putting things on a dish is considered prep. And she did not do that at all in the challenge. She was eliminated.
Yeah. And I don't know. So I was very kind of rattled by one particular choice, and it wasn't the Angelina choice. I'll spoil it. Angelina and Jeremy both work in Miami. Angelina is a sous chef, even though she is seen as a beast in prep. If I'm not mistaken, and honestly, I don't think I can go back all the way to the beginning of the season in my notes, but when we had the sort of prep race at the beginning of the season, the first quickfire, if you will, she did not advance. She did not advance. She did not advance. She wasn't one of the fastest, like, 8 chefs. So, I mean, even if she's kind of notorious for being a beast in prep, and even though she is a sous chef by trade, or at the time, I guess she was, I do wonder if this pick was just Miami and, you know, maybe a lot of what she was great at didn't come across on the show as consistently as maybe it did for the other competitors. Because she was fine. I don't think she hurt Jeremy at all. I think picking Marjorie is a really, really bad call in this instance. Does anyone agree with me and want to kind of weigh in why, or I'll continue if not?
Is it because you think that she's, you know, in a situation like this where it's stressful and panicky and the tension is high, she has shown in the past to kind of buckle in those situations a little bit?
Not at all. Not at all. I wouldn't have, I mean, I
was
think
it, that, it's like, what is Antonio thinking? Was it because, if she was to do a dessert or a bread sort of dish, that it would be more seen like, oh, that was something Marjorie did versus that's something Amar did?
No. That's also, these are both excellent observations, only validating my point even further. What I would say is, I think this has come up in the past on Top Chef, and I apologize if somebody can remind us in the comments or if anyone remembers, that would be great. But I think when someone has come just shy of the finale and they lose, you do wonder if they're still carrying any of that around with them. It may have been Antonia that had this sort of reputation before. There was a concern raised on that level when we were in a similar position. But Marjorie seemingly has just lost and is one step away from the finale. And maybe she's not clear in that headspace. Maybe she's not ready to prep this food for somebody else and do great work because, quite understandably, she's probably very disappointed having lost the day before or 2 days before or whatever it was. It wasn't that long ago. So I was very concerned that Marjorie would be the wrong choice for that reason. For any other reason, I think Marjorie's awesome. And you would love to have her on your team. She crushed the bread and dessert. And so even though you wouldn't get too much credit, I think you might get credit for being seen as smart. And it's still your kind of concept, your dish, your recipe. You're going to get credit for it, even if she did really great work with it. By the way, Amar got dinged for the thing Marjorie didn't seem to do great work with. Right. So I don't know exactly how to quantify that. I was just a little worried that maybe she was going to be too inside her own head here. But it's the reason I asked it the way I did is it doesn't sound like you guys were really feeling that. So
I wasn't that worried about it.
Yeah.
I wasn't that worried about it. I think that you bring up really valid points. I think that that's, and I think it's interesting, and I would almost, you know, cause the counterpoint is like, so we got Angelina on the show, and like, if she's a great prep cook and everything like that, that's fine. Maybe it didn't come across on the show. I do think that she was picked in an earlier challenge, which one was it?
Mm-hmm.
Was
it Marjorie the one
where Kwame went home, right? And right. Angelina was one of the chefs
selected. It was the,
right.
Yeah. The like fast concept restaurant, the one with Taco Dude.
Yeah, so she was, you know, she was the helper there. She helped with Pasta Mama. So we've seen that she has this reputation among the chefs that were still in the competition as someone who is really great. But she's not like super amazing television. She's not a character that we specifically remember because she went out so long ago. And you go into this finale and you're already bummed that Marjorie is gone, that Isaac is gone, especially Isaac, who wins fan favorite, and we don't get some sort of scenario where Isaac can play ball. That really sucks. So to kind of marry your point of like these sous chefs who are feeling disappointed, or these two chefs who were feeling disappointed that they had just lost in Marjorie and Isaac, I almost wish that it was mandatory that you had to have one of them on your team, because that makes it an interesting challenge to have to navigate. And also you get really big characters that are still active for the finale, and for people who were really invested in that first half of the finale, at least you get a little bit more screen time with Isaac and Marjorie. So I think that that's probably how I would have addressed that twist. I really would have liked to have seen both of them. But in terms of that being a chief concern with Marjorie, I think Marjorie's strengths far outweigh the concern that she's going to be too far inside her own head to deliver. I think if Marjorie is on the board, especially as a second round pick when you only have two picks, I feel like you have to pick Marjorie, the person who can bake, the person who is amazing with bread products and things like that. If you really want to create a full meal, especially someone who you have rapport with, Amar has known her throughout this entire competition. I think that you have to just trust that she's going to have your back and put all of her amazing skills to good use. So I didn't have any problem with it. I thought that selecting Marjorie there was the right call, and I just wish that Isaac could have been selected somehow too.
Yeah, and I
was gonna say, not to mention the fact that, again, I'm not seeing into Marjorie's head here, but I would also, if I was in that position, I would think like, okay, yes, this sucks, but hey, I don't even need to think here. Amar's in charge. Amar's going to tell me what to do. I just have to put my head down and work. And, you know, when they bring back these past contestants for challenges, you know, it's happened a couple times this season. I think part, you know, specifically when they brought back Philip, I think everyone was like, oh, nobody wants to pick Philip. And then I think Kwame made a point of like, no, I want Philip, because Philip actually, you know, when he doesn't actively plan dishes, he's a good worker and he does what he's told. And I think that's a very similar scenario that kind of carries over into these eliminated players. I can understand where you're coming from, Antonio, in terms of where that psychology of just finishing short might happen. But at the same time, I think in a cooking environment, you can be so task oriented that you can sort of tune out everything that's going on around you. Though I do agree with Josh, I do wish Isaac was involved in some sort of capacity. I know I talked before about the various ways they've done this pick in the past. I think sometimes they've done like, they just bring out like the six most recently eliminated chefs rather than the entire bunch, though they probably did it this time just to A, get everyone in the room, and B, in case, you know, a similar pick happens with Jeremy picking Angelina and I don't know, Amar decides to pick Francis or something, some early boot.
Yeah. Kurt, yeah, that, I mean, that makes a lot of sense. I don't know. Kurt, from a game theory perspective, were you on board with the Kwame pick to try to split up that pair and rattle Jeremy a little bit? Or are you not on board with playing games like that this late into the season in the finale episode?
I mean, I think it was only half playing a game. I mean, you know, technically what? Jeremy picked Kwame last round, right?
Yeah.
And Jeremy ended up, you know, doing well last round. So it was, it was part, I think, to rattle, Jeremy, but it was also kind of giving an acknowledgement to the fact that, you know, Kwame has helped out in the past. Sure, he had some rough episodes in the middle, or like leading up to his boot. But I do think that, that he is kind of a solid workhorse if he's given direction and told what to do.
Yeah, and to be fair, we didn't see any negative kind of impact of that pick. So it wasn't as though his pick of Kwame really rattled Amar. Like, we saw Kwame throughout the season be the chef whisperer. He's improving sauces. He's making suggestions. He's giving pep talks. Kwame for president. We know that that's sort of the motif we've seen throughout. I mean, he almost saved Philip from Philipping himself on Restaurant Wars because he wanted to tell him, look, your strawberry salad dish, too sweet. You need to mix this up. And Philip wasn't hearing it. So he can't, I mean, look, Kwame is no miracle worker, right? He can't do the impossible, but he has stepped in and helped out in many key situations throughout the season. And it wasn't like he did try to step in here and screw Amar over. I mean, honestly, Mike, you're right. From the jump, one of the first things we see is Amar saying, Jeremy's weak under stress. He's going to crack. And that's one of the first things we see in the episode. Then we get this next step, which beyond the sous draft is they're getting one more sous chef or one more prep chef to help with their prep. And each of them is getting their former mentor. For Jeremy, that's John George, who comes out huge pop, loves Jeremy. They're bros. They're dudes together. It's kind of sad. It's a little weird, but that's happening. Then for Amar, it's the restaurateur Charlie Palmer. And Amar and Charlie Palmer are not on good terms. They haven't even spoken in 2 years, and they left it on really bad terms. Does anybody have a hot take about this, about whether
that's
this was
so
just
unfair?
Right.
It's really crappy. It's really crappy.
It's the equivalent of like if Kwame was in the finals and they're like, hey, Kwame, remember your estranged father? Well, he's coming back and you're going to cook alongside him. Like it rattles you. I mean, I think it's sort of an ironic in that Amar started the episode by saying Jeremy is weak under pressure and I am cool as a cucumber, only to be rattled by this very last minute thing. I would say when they first came out, I'm like, okay, this is a cool concept. The two of them have dropped these names for the entirety of the season. So I thought it was a cool opportunity. The producers say, oh, cool. There's two people here that have such famous mentors. Let's bring them here. But once you found out what was going on between Charlie and Amar, I don't know about you guys. For me, it got really uncomfortable to watch. It was interesting, but I just really got really, especially when Charlie Palmer has that confessional where he basically calls Amar an asshole. And I don't want to see that in my Top Chef finale, let alone Top Chef in general.
Yeah, I think there's a time and place for it. Like, I think that it could be interesting, but not when the stakes are this high. You know, when we are on the line for one of these two people is going to win and this season is about to end. For Amar to have this person who means a lot to him, you know, is at the, you know, probably at the center of most of his formative experiences as a chef, to have this guy that is coming back and has all of this weight and history behind him, but a lot of it is bad. A lot of it is haunted history. To have that guy come in here in the 11th hour is really rattling, really, I think, kind of unfair. I think it's really, especially when that's the dynamic between these two, and yet between Taco Dad and Jean George, they're best friends, they're bros, they're literally broing down. He makes Jean George a bro in his confessional. Like, that's the effect that Jeremy has on him. So it's really unbalanced. And then, not to, you know, get my tinfoil knife out here, but it makes me wonder, like, was this the plan? Like, is this part of why it's Amar in the finale and Jeremy here? Was there a backup plan? Like,
no
I don't
way.
Know.
Yeah, they had Mike Isabella on standby. Like, yeah. Hey, Marjorie, you going to make the final? Come on. And Emerald's there on standby too. Like, that's what was going to happen.
Yeah. Drop the tinfoil. This was not a conspiracy.
Yeah, plus, that tinfoil knife is not very sharp, so it's not even good to utilize in the first place.
Okay, but I was worried. I was nervous. I was like, is this why we have what we have here? Because if so, Top Chef, we've got a bone to pick. But if you're saying that I should put it away, I'll put it away.
No, I mean, I really think we had Mike Isabella and Emeril on standby. I would bet you very solid money that Isabella was in Vegas at that time. And then I don't know why he doesn't show up.
Why then wouldn't they have been in the crowd shots or anything at the restaurant? You would think that if they're going to fly them all the way out to Vegas, aren't they at least going to be in the crowd?
Or maybe he was on standby to fly to Vegas. I mean, I don't know. Emeril was there, right? So we had people there. I mean, maybe Isabella's there. Maybe he's not. Maybe he doesn't leave his restaurant if that doesn't happen. But I'm pretty sure that would have been the plan, that you've got these four chefs who each have four pretty key mentors that have been mentioned throughout the season. Those were your clear final four chefs once Amar advances through Last Chance Kitchen. At that point, if you want to make this kind of mentor thing happen, those are the four people that you've got at the ready. And I think that, you know, I don't know if this was an audible. I haven't read anything about it, so I don't know. But it does seem odd to me that this would have been the plan, but that in no part of the planning did they check with Charlie Palmer and say, hey, by the way, you and Amar, good terms? Are you guys good? Is this going to work on the show? Or is it going to look like we stacked the deck against this poor kid? Because that's what it looked like to me, and that's pretty rough.
But you got to imagine they vetted it. It's not like they could have done this and not known that there was a strained relationship between these two.
Well, this is where the fact that it's a reality show comes into play, and the fact that a certain aspect of them is playing for ratings and is playing for drama, and it is unfortunate, but a side effect of reality TV is that sometimes relationships are broken and they're exploited for the effort of an audience's enjoyment. Though again, I don't think it's something that we enjoyed in general. And I know, Kurt, you said that going into this episode, you might have thought that Amar stood a pretty good chance, but I thought between the Last Chance Kitchen returnee thing on his shoulder and this Charlie Palmer thing, I pretty much instantly knew that Amar was going to lose this. Just because, yes, he could have overcame this, and that could have been a miraculous type of storyline. But I don't know, the way it was being presented, I feel like Amar kind of left a bad taste in our mouths by the end of it. And I don't think Top Chef would present its winner like that on the very last episode, with the exception of Nicholas screaming at his staff. But let's try to forget about that.
Well, yeah, but I mean, saying the Charlie Palmer thing, we didn't find out about that until the episode. Like, I think I said coming into the episode, I felt that there was actually a good Amar story, especially in terms of, like, we've seen Last Chance Kitchen winners win the season. But it was, yeah, it was the way the relationship with his mentor was portrayed during the episode. I was like, yeah, like you, I thought that there was like no chance this was going to play out in Amar's favor in terms of his chances of winning. I mean, I'm just wondering if, you know, let's say Carl had made it to the finals, like, and we haven't really heard necessarily that there's a we haven't really heard that there's, like, you know, a big name mentor in his past.
MC Hammer. It was MC Hammer.
Oh, that's true. That's true.
They stayed up all night making those rap tapes, Kurt. Don't you ever forget it.
No, but I'm like wondering, to what extent was this a decision that was also somewhat made potentially on the fly in terms of a story? Like, if somebody had made it to the end who didn't have a big name mentor, this just might not have been something that they ended up being portrayed. But, you know, part of me also does think that, you know, they saw, oh, Jeremy has this person in his past, Amar has this person in his past, let's work quickly to see if we can get them on board, use the Top Chef name, and it just ended up working. That's what I think happened.
Yeah.
I'd agree with that, because I was just going to say, I think we don't know what the amount of time is between the final five where Carl left and this, you know, the magic hour that we saw last week. I know there's a significant amount of time, which we assumed is where Last Chance Kitchen plays out, is basically through that entirety of that break. But I'm assuming once they know Amar's coming back, they have a good amount of time to be able to make those calls. I don't think it's as on the fly as, you know, people as you know, Spotlight, Mark Ruffalo is running down a hallway to get a deadline in on time. I think they had plenty of time there where they could definitely manage to bring people in.
Yeah, and I'll say this. We had a question from Travis Payne about the same kind of topic. Did the mentors available for the show have an impact on what finalists were chosen? I think once you get down to the final four and you know who the final four are, if you're a storyteller, if you're somebody who makes television, if that's what you do, then you probably look into this and you say, you know, this is a very interesting kind of story we've got here. Each of these four people have a very clearly defined mentor that we've talked about. There is a very long break between the shooting of the season prime and the shooting of the finale. It's not just they immediately fly from, you know, from the Bay Area to Vegas and they're ready to go. They haven't seen each other for a while. This is not only kind of tipped off and keyed off on the show when they greet each other having not seen a while. In past seasons, we've heard the chef testants talk about it. In the time between the show and the finale,
it's baked into the concept.
I've done this. It's baked into the contest. And the other element of that is baked in is you can also see this in the reshoots that they do with the talking heads. Josh, I was texting with you about this. Amar's beard length varies from second to second in between his talking heads. He'll do a talking head where he starts a sentence, then they show something happening on screen. He finishes a sentence with a talking head, and his beard is an inch and a half longer in the finish of the sentence.
Oh, he was just in the booth for a long time.
Right, Rip Van Amar.
He had like white flakes of something on his black t-shirt at one point, and like then they cut back to him again, and they're gone. So, you know, they're definitely taking over time. I was just being very, very observant on the neatness of his t-shirt.
Yes, you were.
They're like, Amar, clean yourself. God. They just hosed him down in between takes.
Clean off your t-shirt while you're talking.
We need to cut away. Amar, you've got something right there? No, a little lower? Okay, good.
All right. Yeah, you're like Bernie Sanders out there. Come on.
I have these beautiful white flakes on my shirt.
This is olive oil powder. Yeah. Yeah.
His beard was longer, and like even like the, you know how he like shaves the sides of his head, it was sometimes it was like really shaved down where it was like basically just the skin and stubble, and then sometimes where it was grown out. So a lot of those confessionals seemed like they were taken from very different points in time.
Well, and to me that, you know, they're getting reshoots, they're getting additional kind of material. And some of that is, I think, the story that emerges as they begin to edit the episodes, as they begin to kind of see later on down the line who emerges, who doesn't emerge, and so forth and so on. Some of that stuff they're taking on the fly, and some of it maybe they're setting things up later. They're like, oh, we would love if you could go back and say X, Y, and Z, considering two episodes from now, you go out for this reason. When we were taking that at the moment, we didn't know that. So if you could have this sentence, and so forth and so on. So they very clearly have several rounds of shooting these confessionals. And I think that that is in part to help bolster the story that they're telling. So it's very possible a lot of these reshoots where they were talking about their mentors or the things that were featured throughout were done because they knew ultimately that it ended this way, a decision that they didn't really make on the fly, but that they made in a kind of a period of time where they were like, you know, it would be really cool if we could get this because these four people have this thing in common, and we could have Emeril or Mike, Isabella, or whoever there if the other people win. But otherwise, we've got these people. But I mean, you're right, Josh. They probably vetted it to that, you know, to a certain extent. You got
to
think.
Know. They couldn't have not known, because that's all. I mean, the reason that they would go ahead and do it is because it's good for drama.
What's weird about that is that why isn't there a scene then of Amar kind of making up with Charlie Palmer? Why isn't there a scene
maybe
where
they didn't make up?
I mean, that seems like a really bad idea to me. If you're going to try to put it, you know, put everything aside and win this competition, why isn't Amar saying? Amar says to the camera, I was cocky when I left. I said some things I shouldn't have. I was an asshole. He basically says that to the Top Chef camera. Why can't he say that to Charlie Palmer? I mean, I don't understand.
Well, here's the thing. And again, this might be me pulling out the tinfoil knife from the knife block, but maybe Amar did try to apologize for Charlie Palmer, and Charlie Palmer said, I'm not having anything of it. Because let's compare those two confessionals. Amar is very admitting to the fact that, yes, I was an asshole. Charlie Palmer seems a lot more steamed about it than Amar is. Amar seems more sad than steamed at this point about the entire issue. So it seems like if I could harbor a guess here, maybe Charlie Palmer's still harboring some resentment towards that, and Amar did try to apologize, and it just didn't go over well at all. And Charlie Palmer just says, you know what? I'm here to cook. I'm going to help you prepare your meals, and then I'm not going to talk to you again.
Yeah, I mean, I think that was pretty much how it came off. There was a hug. They shared a hug. How about a hug for your father, your fake father here?
How about a hug, Scott?
Don't look at me like I'm
ducker,
freaking
ducker.
Charlie Palmer here. Give me a hug. Yeah, I've heard some people make that noise in their sleep. It's really weird because I don't know exactly. I don't know what's happening there with Amar and Charlie Palmer, but it doesn't, not a good look. Doesn't come off looking good for anybody. Comes off looking like the show brought in this giant ball of nerves for Amar and threw it at him at the 11th hour. And the last, very last moment that he needed this, they threw a monkey wrench into this whole situation. I don't want to say it cost him, because nothing from Amar's prep period or menu planning seemed to cost him. It was execution on the day that seemed to cost him more than anything. So Charlie Palmer wasn't involved with that. And Charlie Palmer was eating the food. So maybe just cooking for him was enough. I don't know. But that was a major issue. And I mean, I threw my hands up and was like, we could podcast the entire podcast about this very thing that happened that Bravo was involved with. They had to know, as you're saying, Josh. And yet here we are. Here we are with one dude being so happy to see his bro and the other guy being very kind of edgy about seeing his estranged, you know, erstwhile father or would-be father. right. So that was really, really rough. It was just so rough.
Yeah, it sucked. It sucked. I think it was difficult.
Yeah, and I think I agree, Antonio, that it didn't seem like I got less of a feel from the food that Amar was going to lose and more of a feel from how we were shown the relationship with Charlie, how that made me feel that I was supposed to feel about his chances about winning.
Right. Yeah. Totally.
If that makes sense.
Exactly.
Yeah, that makes sense. That makes sense. Totally. And I don't know. Again, that's really not the best look then, because it's like, why don't we telegraph this a little bit? And I think that gets back to the question that Meg asked us. I think that gets back to the question, or sorry, it was Melissa, Mel Got Served, that asked us that question about most obvious winners edit throughout the season. No, throughout this episode. Yeah. I mean, it's like, this is not going to go well for Amar, and nothing that was happening made it seem that way. And yet, let's get to the meal itself. The four ingredients that each chose to feature in some varying way, shape, or form. Amar wanted coconut, tuna, sea urchin, and lamb. Jeremy wanted foie, duck, bronzini, bass, and cheese, which is very interesting. So that was what we had. Jeremy's doing two types of foie prep. And by the way, doing the kind of foie prep that you don't always have time for, but he's got a little bit of time here because he's got the 2 days. So he's going to make it rock and he's going to work it. He's going to do that. And he's going to do
some quiet
prep.
Redemption for Chef Dooley on that, huh?
Yeah. Well, this was 2 days, Josh, yeah. Not 3 hours.
This was the second chance for both the torchon and the risotto this right. season. Yeah. And both of them were able to succeed on their second time out.
Wow. Is it possible? I mean, I guess it's possible, but I and again, this is the not a professional chef side of me speaking. But is it easy to cook a dish that does not feature a particular item? I mean, could you just make something and say, okay, I'm going to make this. And I guess, you know, if I look at it retroactively, it features this item.
This risotto features rice.
Exactly. I mean,
this orange juice
really
features oranges.
Highlighting the rice in this risotto.
Yes.
I mean, I tell you, you could go back and probably look at 80% of the dishes that were cooked this season and say, and this dish highlights blank. I mean, it seems like something that could be done retroactively and wasn't really that much of a challenge in terms of a challenge. I mean, yes, you had to cook well, but you agree or no, you disagree?
No, I think you're right. It's not that much of a challenge. I think what it is it's a little bit of a noose. It's basically saying by you saying you're highlighting the coconut on this coconut financier or whatever. If the coconut doesn't come through, if we're not saying there's a lot of coconut flavor or you did a really good job with the coconut, then we're going to say this dish tasted fine, but as a job of highlighting the coconut, it did poorly. Even though coconut was the key kind of different ingredient in it, it didn't do a really good job of featuring it. And I think that's where you can get in trouble is it's rope. What you do with the rope is up to you. You can build a bridge or you can hang yourself. And I think that's really what it comes down to is they allow them to kind of say, this is what I'm going to show you how to make awesome. And then if you don't make that ingredient really pop in the dish, even if you make a really good dish, I think you're going to get nailed for it. And I think we don't really see that. We see it, I guess we don't really see it in any of the dishes, but they did a really good job featuring the ingredients. It was the prep that really undid both of them, I think.
We've seen a lot of times in the history of Top Chef where somebody has called something and it's been a lot closer to something else in terms of not so much the ingredient, but in terms of, you know, you're calling... Bad example, you're calling it a soup, but it's really more of a stew in terms of how you actually delivered it. And I've always kind of watched that and seen, well, when you deliver to the chefs or to the judges, call it what it's turned out to be rather than what you had set out to be. And I think like this, I couldn't tell in this challenge if they were kind of, it would have been interesting to see them commit to the ingredient prior to developing the dish, where I think we kind of got to hear them vocally conceptualize, but I didn't necessarily see that there was something that there wasn't anything necessarily constricting them to that or constraining them to that when they were actually developing the dishes and finally presenting them to the judges.
I want to kind of tie this into another question that I have about these dishes overall. Amar, in both his first and his last dish here, really seemed to connect it back to his own style and to his roots, and Gail even pointed that out. Do you feel like Amar should have been given sort of extra credit on this grading scale for being able to do that, as opposed to Jeremy, who was just sort of like, yeah, I'll feature four ingredients and I'll do a bunch of different techniques to each one to just show the range of things I can do?
Well, and that's the debate. I mean, it was phrased a lot of different ways, rustic versus finesse, flavor versus technique, however you want to say it. But I mean, the debate between these two chefs were Amar is cooking Amar food. Jeremy is cooking highly proficient, very well put together, incredibly tasty pop food that pops. Is that Jeremy food? Sometimes when it's seafood, I guess it is. But otherwise, Jeremy's thing is that Jeremy does that, not that Jeremy cooks rustic food or that Jeremy cooks a very particular style of food. His style is totally proficient, totally refined, high technique, great flavor. That's what he does really well. And that doesn't necessarily resonate in a particular thing like rustic, where you're saying, you know, or like Isaac's food, which we would say a lot of braises, a lot of stews, a lot of very similar kinds of meat prep, where that comes off in a certain way. Jeremy's isn't necessarily represented in the way the food ultimately tastes at the end of the day, more in how he's doing it and what he's putting forth. Like a molecular gastronomist, but not that kind of style. So I don't know. I do think that that's very, very key kind of feature. And I think that that's difficult because you're right, Kurt, when you say like maybe they just kind of talk about the ingredient going forward. I mean, they did talk a little bit about what they wanted to do just very quickly. Amar's making a seared ahi tuna as his first dish with some of those coconut flavors that he brings back in the final dish. His second dish is a lobster risotto. Then he wants to make a rack of lamb with a lamb meat pie, sort of a lamb two ways. And then finally, he wants to make a coconut financier and a tropical fruit salad. Coconut financier, kind of a fancy word for like a gooey kind of cake. And where he goes wrong, we'll talk about very briefly here in a moment. Jeremy's doing kind of a double foie prep, which we talked about, which could be very difficult. He's doing kind of all these different things. His second dish is not fully cooked. We talked a little bit about how he's going to do the bronzini earlier, but he does the bronzini as well. The duck dish was a little undercooked, like I said. And then finally, he does this kind of interesting cheese plate as his dessert dish, getting laughs as a cheese plate. But that's what it is, right?
I'm going for gas.
Well, it's more so it's more so a food version of genitals than it is a cheese plate.
Hey-o.
It's basically leave it to the bro to make that on a plate.
Well, it went over pretty well, Mike. It was well consumed. It was a crowd pleaser. Let's put it that way. So
the honey wasn't that much of a crowd pleaser.
That was just sugar water, actually, is what they said, right?
So yeah, pretty much. Careful.
Just firing off blanks, I guess. But anyway, this is very difficult. Look, I don't want to really hem and haw over this too much. It comes down to the fact that Amar undercooked his lamb. Undercooked his lamb, the rack of lamb, which Marjorie, by the way, if I'm not mistaken, pointed out. Is that correct? Anybody else catch that?
Well, I know that Charlie Palmer, I think, like helped prepare it, but I don't think he cooked it. I don't remember if Marjorie did point it out. But if not, that's totally on Amar's head to not have seen that be a true criticism and to try to cook that lamb a little bit more.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure Marjorie points this out. Keep in mind, Marjorie has had head issues in the competition with meat that wasn't prepped correctly. So Amar, when it came out, it was a little too on the rare side. And I think he wanted to finish it under a heat lamp and letting it rest. I think he thought would kind of finish it to the texture and doneness that was intended. Turned out it was a little under with the prep, and that was difficult. And then his cake that Marjorie did make, the coconut cake, no doubt she made it per Amar's recipe. For being called a financier, as you're talking about, Kurt, it was too thick. It was not that it was a thick, dry cake. It was moist, but the financier is going to be much moister or gooier than what ultimately the product was that was delivered. I mean, it looked burned on the plate, so that was a little rough.
But it was interesting. It seemed like the place both people did fall, or both people, Amar and Jeremy, both did fall down in the same course in terms of, Jeremy realized he had undercooked his meat at the same time that Amar's meat was also undercooked. So I think they for that course they both ended up with
same
the,
screw
with
up
Jeremy's yeah same screw up with Jeremy's undercooked duck and Amara's undercooked rack of lamb. So I almost thought that was a little bit of a wash, and we'd be coming down to the other three courses to really determine who won.
Yeah, but then again, Jeremy's what do you want to call it, like cheese blocking balls didn't ultimately end up too negatively. There was a little sour note on the honey water, but Mars was bad.
But Blaze also pointed out, and this is Richard Blaze, king of molecular gastronomy on Top Chef, said, yeah, this is like fine, but it shows off technique more than ingredients. And I feel like it's interesting. You said, Antonio, it really comes down to flavor versus technique. This is sort of like the civil war of Guy Fieri almost, flavor town versus technique town.
Oh, God.
But
I want to secede from that union. Go ahead.
A lot of hot sauce that's flying about. Usually, I feel like the judges usually side with flavor over technique, which is why, Richard Blaze, as a technique wizard as he may have been, ended up losing in the end of his first season is because he wasn't able to put out flavorful food.
Well, he lost his first season because he choked.
Oh, yeah, he was choked. I was sad that Jeremy didn't lose, just because I waited an entire week to pull out a Jeremy's choking joke, and it's not working.
You got there.
I tried to shoehorn it in there.
I liked it.
But yeah, I think that you know, I was very surprised that, again, as much as Amar may have the Dax stacked against him here with the Charlie Palmer stuff, and the fact that I feel like as a last chance kitchen returnee, he had to put out like immaculate levels of food over Jeremy in order to win and really justify that win. And they were pretty even for the most part. So in spite of that, though, I feel like on paper with the whole flavor versus technique debate, the judges are usually going to side with flavor, which has surprised me why they sided with technique until I look at the man who resembles technique and realize that Jeremy is probably the man that Tom looked in the mirror and wishes he looked like, which I think definitely might set the biases of the judging a tiny bit.
That's some tinfoil knifing.
Yeah, I don't agree with that. What does that even mean, Mike? Is that a fat joke?
No, it's that Tom Colicchio is bald and he says, wow, Jeremy can pull off the bald sexier than I can. I don't think it's like I'm basing it, you know, everything based on that. But there has been stuff that flies around over the course of Top Chef about, you know, Tom favors men. Tom favors white men. Guess who won? Again, this is a very dull tinfoil knife that I'm pulling out of the knife block here, but I'm just gonna spout it out again since everyone seems to do it every season.
Well, I'm hetero here. I think Tom's way more handsome than Jeremy, for the record.
I don't disagree.
Yeah, Tom's got those eyes, man. You can't walk away from that. So so anyway,
but he calls it a doobie.
Yeah, I'd say that, you know, there's a lot of dads out there that are handsome. Kirk Clark, come on, like actual dads, not frat dads. Like there's a lot of older gentlemen out there who might call it a doobie or say they want to smoke some grass. Or does anyone know where they can crack a lid?
All right, let's put this thing back on the rails. Oh, here.
There's no rails. This is the finale. We're off the rails.
Let's put it back.
If I had 2 to 3 hours where I had to grab drinks with either Tom or Jeremy, I would choose Jeremy.
Oh my God.
And I maybe and you know what? It may be because everybody else is picking Tom and he's unavailable.
So you would, yeah. Well, you'd get a lot more quality time with Jeremy. You'd get more one-on-one time.
Yeah, Jeremy is the table scraps in this scenario for Kurt.
Yeah, Top Chef Con, you're getting an autographed Jeremy cookbook to the extent he has one, Kurt, for sure.
Oh, does Top Chef Con, does that feature Ricardo Montalban as the guest judge?
Absolutely it does. Yes. Yes, there's that is happening for sure. But no, I don't know. I just, it does come down to technique versus the kind of I wouldn't say flavor. Amar is flavor forward. It's not like Jeremy's food is flavorless though. John George says in this episode, like, what struck me about Jeremy, why I chose him to really kind of take under my wing, is that he put so much flavor in the first bite. He knows that if you're not grabbed by the dish in the first bite, you're done. And I noticed that from him, about him from the jump, that he was really good about putting that forward. So to say Jeremy's not flavor forward, I think is to reduce him to kind of an interesting dichotomy with Amar. But I think it really does him no service and does not give him the credit that he deserves for what, you know, ultimately was very well received food throughout the season. There's a reason, by the way, the winning team picked Jeremy in the draft. It's because Jeremy showed out and showed up really well throughout the course of the season. Not just with techniques like with the crudo and the ice bowl, but with the prep and with the flavors that he was putting together. The man loves a sweet and spicy. He loves a chili with some other kind of sweet combo. Chili is in a lot of his food, and he does a really good job seemingly featuring it, and he always gets good compliments about what he's doing. So
The way, Antonio, I feel like we sort of buried the lead here by not even talking about this. Congratulations on your win. You picked Jeremy all the way back when we talked about the first two episodes like 4 months ago. I would definitely call you the Blake Shelton of our voice analog here. So congratulations on a win, my friend.
Thanks. Although I think he got passed around like a bad social disease throughout the context of this season. I can't remember where he ultimately ended up. Did you ultimately end up with him?
I know. I think we gave him to Josh last week.
Well, we gave him to me, and then we gave him to Josh last week because we thought he'd be dead because he committed suicide in the Pasta Mama Forest. So that was in absentia.
Well, I'm alive, and I passed Jeremy on to Kurt to go have a nice dinner together.
Oh, thank you.
So we all win.
Yes. So there you go. Kurt and Jeremy riding off into the sunset, Butch and Sundance, crudoing it up. But, I don't know what that means. Don't read anything into that. But yeah, it just ultimately, I think it comes down to Amar's mistakes in this finale were maybe a little more egregious. And Jeremy's food was also really good. Jeremy did cook his duck under just like Amar cooked his lamb under. Jeremy had a little honey water. The honey didn't really add a ton. But his dessert ultimately was a little more kind of, it didn't fail in the technique the way Amar's prep of the coconut cake did. So I think that that made a difference for sure. And I think Jeremy's artistry and really kind of vision were really key in his development. And so we have a new Top Chef. It's Jeremy. Mike, I'm calling on you for this because I know you've done the homework. Where does Jeremy rank in terms of quality of wins, losses? Can you give us maybe, let's say, is he bottom half of winners using scientific facts, like how well he did throughout the course of the season? Is he bottom half of winners?
Surprisingly, no.
Okay.
So right before this, and we got the question from Adam Rita about it, so it's a good excuse for me to become my stats nerd and look at all this. I looked at all the Top Chef winners and just ranked them by the number of wins. In a tie, I ranked them, you know, the higher one was the one who had the lower number of trips to the bottom. Out of 13 winning chefs, Jeremy comes in at number 4. Surprisingly enough, Jeremy won 7 challenges, which is a lot. He actually finished with the same number of wins as Stephanie from season 4, and he just finished below her because he took more trips to the bottom than she did. But yeah, as much as we may disparage Jeremy for his personality, the fact is he's in like the top basic, you know, quarter or so of Top Chef winners at this point. So there's no denying the talent of this man.
Well, and we talked so much on this podcast throughout the season about the quality of chefs on this season of Top Chef. Karen, yeah. Isaac, Carl, Amar, just Kwame, these people, Wesley, people who had been either Beard nominated or Beard won, people who won challenges at the top, who across the board were doing really great things with food. And not that Top Chef ever has totally poor cast, but this seemed to be an especially good one. And Colicchio is saying, like, in his postseason interviews, like, this was one of the best casts we've ever had. Like, I think the show is really humming. We could make it to season 20. We're getting really talented people that we're bringing in the doors for these auditions. So that being the case, is that top four even more impressive? Anyone?
Yep, I would say so. Well, it's also, I would say this top half because, you know, Jeremy had and Stephanie both had 7 wins. Michael Voltaggio, Kristen Kish, and Hung all had 6 wins each as well. So really, there's a clear top half of people who finish with like 6 and above wins. And then you have May and Nicholas both finished with 5. Harold and Elon and Hosea all finished with 4. And then Kevin's all the way at the bottom finishing with 3. Interestingly enough, not counting Last Chance Kitchen, I think had Amar won, he'd actually be in that hovering in that bottom with Harold, Elon, Hosea, and Kevin. And he, you know, I think we actually talked about the Hosea and Kevin comparison to Amar last week. So it'd be interesting to see how he may place. I mean, again, personally, I'd say in terms of like how I enjoy him as a chef, he might be the bottom in my rankings. But I would say, again, looking at this objectively by number of challenge wins, even though we had that low streak in the middle, Jeremy kind of killed this season.
Yeah, he had a great person drafted him. That's probably part of it. Anyway, he killed the season, but the season was full of fantastic competitors like we're talking about. And we had a lot of questions about this. I'm looking at one from Megan at Hilarios on Twitter from this season and past, who should come back for second chances. We had other questions about who should return. Josh, do you have any theories about this? I know you've done a little homework yourself as well. Brendan Fitzpatrick, right. The great Brendan Fitzpatrick, wanted to know which 3 chefs are most likely to come back for an All-Stars. Do you have some thoughts on All-Stars if we do it? I think we're a couple seasons away, but counting after Texas to now, who are we looking
at? Well, it would start with Texas.
Texas. My apologies.
Texas is the first season post All-Stars. So yeah, I thought about this in anticipation of the podcast, figuring we would probably be talking about All-Stars because we have discussed All-Stars in past Top Chef podcasts. And it's one of the conversations that we've had this season of like, are we getting set up for another All-Stars? Are we close to ready? I think we're close to ready. I don't think it's the perfect time. I think it sounds like, where are we going next? We're going to Charleston next. That's season 14.
Yep. Charleston, South Carolina is the announced location. That will not be an All-Star season, I don't think. Doesn't mean we won't see any returning chefs, but I don't think it will be a full All-Star season in Charleston, South Carolina.
Yeah. So, and I think it's good. I think let's get one more season of meeting some new chef testants and getting some new blood into the competition. I think that there are still a few spots that are tenuous, but I think that especially if you look at this past season and the season before it, especially, I think that there's some really great contenders for people who could come back from this season. I would be really shocked if we don't see the return of Isaac and Marjorie. I think that both of those people are locks to return to Top Chef, assuming their schedules allow it. I can't imagine that that Top Chef would not want to be back in business with both of those guys.
Well, I'd even say, like, based on the fan favorite projections and winners, I think you'd have to throw Karen in there as well.
The four that I have from California that I feel like I would bring back are Isaac, Marjorie, Karen, and Kwame. I think that those are the four that I would really like to see. If you really want to throw a nuclear bomb into the mix, bring Philip back. I think you could take or leave him. But those would be the four that I feel like from this season would definitely be back for an All-Stars.
I would say that I can definitely agree with those four. But first of all, on the Philip thing, I could definitely see them bringing him back. But I also think from the exit interviews that we read with Philip back during Restaurant Wars, I don't know if Philip is terribly happy with the edit he got from Top Chef. So I'm not entirely sure if he, you know, as TV hungry as he may be, if he wants to return to a place that basically made fun of him for 3 months.
Sure, but it's so hard to imagine Philip turning down that call. Like, he gets the call from Top Chef and he's like,
you're an all-star, right. Philip. You have to go.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
Like, this is the thing he says no to?
That's true. I mean, he has two restaurants. Who knows? Maybe he's busy with that. I would also think about if I rank those four, Karen would be at the bottom for me just because, again, I think she's a super awesome chef. And P.S., huge kudos to her and Isaac for being among the list of James Beard Award nominees this year.
Yeah,
that was
great.
Luckily sent along to us this past week by a couple of our listeners. So we're awesome job because of that. I would maybe put Amar in this as well, just because if you're looking at it purely from a narrative perspective, he has a lot of unfinished business at the end of this season. He can say, you know, I came back from Last Chance Kitchen. I lost. I had a falling out with Charlie Palmer that might have led to it. I'm ready to cook some good food and get my way to the end once again. And so I feel like he is coming off strong at the end of the season. And because of that, might have a really strong chance of coming back as well.
No, I could see it. I could totally see Amar coming back. I don't have him on my list because the list that I had was looking very California heavy. So I wanted to cut somebody. So Amar got cut. But I would not be mad to see Amar coming back to Top Chef. He's very fun television. He's a really good cook. And as you say, Mike, he does have unfinished business. So I could see it happening. But yeah, do you want to hear the full list? Should we just run through it real quick?
Let's hear it.
This is what Top Chef All-Stars would look like if it happened next season, starting with Top Chef Texas, which was the first season after the last All-Stars. No one other than people from Texas and onward. And if I were the sole casting director, this is the list that we would get. And we'll start with the people in Texas. There's Beverly Kim. She was third or fourth place that season. She was the one that was frequently bullied by Sarah, the runner-up.
Oh my gosh, Sarah was so mean.
Don't use that word. Disavow, yeah, disavow.
I know, disavow. We would bring Sarah back as well because that's drama. You want to do that. Plus, she's a runner-up. I was looking for like a third person from Texas. I loved Tyler Boring because he had the greatest name ever. But I couldn't.
Such a great use of an umlaut.
I know. I couldn't pull myself to pull the Boring trigger. So I put Chris Jones on the list because he has great hair. I love Chris Jones.
What about Edward Lee? You know, I mean, Edward Lee was just nominated for a James Beard Award. I've been to his restaurant, 610 Magnolia.
Yeah, he was like fifth. He was like fifth in that season, I think, or sixth.
Let's put him on there instead.
Let's
put Edward Lee. Edward Lee instead of Chris Jones. I'm happy with that edit. Moving on to Seattle, Brooke. Got to have Brooke back. Can't do this without Brooke. She should have won that season as much as I love Chris and Kish. Can't do it without Sheldon. You got to have Sheldon. Sheldon is the beautiful angel from Hawaii. If you
have
don't
to
remember.
Have Sheldon, yes.
Have to have Sheldon. Then I have two kind of outside the box picks for the rest of Seattle.
What about, are you going to pick Top Chef's favorite Josh?
Oh, yeah, douchebag God,
no.
Josh?
No. We are moving. I mean, if you want to put douchebag Josh instead of, I have John Tesar. Do you remember him?
Oh, yeah. John was great.
Yeah, he was a villain.
Yeah, John was great.
He was a villain. He was a bit of a man child. He was kind of Philip-ish, I feel like. So I feel like he would fill that role pretty well. And I feel like he has unfinished business as well because he went out kind of early.
Did you know he knows Anthony Bourdain? He's featured in
this.
His book. They were friends. He knows Anthony Bourdain. Okay, who else?
He's also like, I think he was also like in his mid-50s when he played as well.
Yes.
So that would be super interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. The fourth and final Seattle contestant that I have on here is Lizzie. Do you remember Lizzie, the South African woman who I think she was top five that season. I thought that she was decent.
Yeah.
So I would throw her in the mix there. I only have two from New Orleans because New Orleans is slim pickings.
Yeah.
I have Nina. Got to get Nina back. Another person with unfinished business. I know that Kurt is a big fan of Nick, but I feel strongly that Nina should have won that season. And then I have Justin. the guy with like the worst attitude on the planet. Nothing was going right for him. He took everything so hard. He was one of Padma's picks. He was the guy from New Orleans. You got to imagine he would butt heads with Isaac, or maybe they would be best friends. Feel like that's a good dynamic to have on the show.
I'm surprised no Shirley.
No Shirley. No, I did not pick Shirley. We could put Shirley here. I would be happy to do that, because the first person that I have on my Boston list, or the extra person that I have on my list from Boston, is Katie, who went out in the quick fire, and I forget what's his name comes in, because she goes out in the
Sunbed
quick fire. Yeah, George comes in. I feel like she's got unfinished business, but if you wanted to take her out, I would be okay with that. And then I think the other four from Boston that you would have to include are Dougie. Gregory. Gotta get Katsuji back. Katsuji's good TV. And I felt like she busted it out pretty hard towards the end. I thought that she was a badass. Is Melissa King. I feel like give Melissa King another shot. And that would be my group of people, plus the four from California, Isaac, Marjorie, Kwame, and Karen. That's what a Top Chef All-Stars would look like next season if I was doing the casting based solely on Texas through now.
That's pretty good.
I like it.
It's pretty good.
I do think we need another season to kind of thin out probably some of those more bottom picks, but I think I think it's a really strong cast. And, you know, even if you throw in, I would love to see, there were some people a la, you know, Johnny Fairplay appearing in Survivor Micronesia. I would love to see some people from pre-All-Stars coming back as well. I would love to see like Kevin from Top Chef Vegas or Sam from the second season of Top Chef. It'd be nice to like sort of see them come back as well, though. Again, it's a really, really strong group from this post All-Stars seasons as well.
Yeah, there's a lot of really good contenders out there.
Where do you guys stand on would you bring a person back for a second All-Stars appearance? So is it Jen Carroll, for example, somebody who you would want to bring back as a possible second All-Star, having already appeared in All-Stars?
I think that there's enough people who haven't done it twice that I feel like give them the shot first. You know, Jen did really well in her first season, and it sucked that she didn't do well in her second time, but she got her second shot.
Kurt, any All-Stars thoughts?
No. Completely no. Not. I mean, I have like this worst case of amnesia when it comes to past seasons. So like I recognize Dougie, but most of the names that Josh is
recognize the white guy. I see how it goes, Kurt.
But most of the names that Josh is rattling off, I didn't recognize. So I'm gonna have to leave this casting decision in his able-bodied hands.
Oh, but you, I would, we have to have Carl. Is this, you want to plant a flag on that
my
one?
My body is so able right now.
I don't know which comment to respond to. No. I think Carl's fine with not appearing. But I get, my question is like, who, like for that next season or the season after that, is kind of the Grayson WTF wise from this season? Like, who from this season is the Grayson of a future season in terms of you're wondering why they're showing up, because they really weren't necessarily that amazing on the season they were on previously?
Giselle.
Okay, there we go.
I could see someone like Jason coming back, because yes, he had a huge streak in Last Chance Kitchen, but I think his time on the Top show itself was actually not that remarkable. But I could totally see him coming back just to like prove himself again, though. Maybe he realized that as much as he quit his job to do something new on Top Chef, maybe Top Chef was not the substitute for a vacation, which is probably what he should have took after quitting his job.
The old Grayson Jason vacation. I see how it goes. Yeah, we can definitely set that out. The Grayson Jason vacation is something that I think, I don't know. What about Chad? We could have Chad. Chad could, he could, what Chad could do.
I was thinking Chad might be, strangely, for no reason, the one.
Here's my idea.
It would be very random. Yeah.
Chad shaves his beard off, fashions it into a wig, and pretends to be Grayson on the next season of Top Chef. Are we in on that?
Until they say, hey, Grayson, would you like to have a glass of wine? And then the illusion's just broken.
The illusion. Yes. My boyfriend's a sommelier. But I don't drink wine anymore. My name is Grayson.
I'm definitely Grayson.
I don't know. Yeah, you're definitely Grayson, even though your hair appears to be made out of beard hair.
I love imitation Grayson.
Imitation Grayson. Grayson on the Jason vacation. Oh my God, I'm killing my.
We're ingratiating Grayson into our Grayson vacation.
Yes, this is.
I like to tie this into like this All-Star stuff into like general thoughts about this season, because to me, at least, I'm trying to compartmentalize, at least between the two seasons we've covered, last season and this season, which one is the better one? Because I think I enjoy this cast over last season. I mean, I think there were a good handful of who people from last season, whereas this season there were people that weren't so good at cooking, but they at least popped a little more, like Francis and Renee, who still has the sexiest stock photo to be used in Top Chef ever. But I feel like this season had a really strong first half, and then it kind of went downhill in this second half. I feel like we had a really strong top eight overall in terms of personality and cooking. And again, this is a personal standpoint, but I feel like the person I probably liked the least ended up winning. And I think there were a lot of really capable chefs that kind of sadly went out in pretty disappointing ways. So I thought this was like something that was really amped up halfway through and then kind of petered out towards the end. I don't know if you guys feel the same way.
Maybe Grayson will be the Boston Rob of Top Chef, where they just keep bringing him back until she wins.
He did not even answer what Mike said whatsoever. Like, nope. Not even
talking into a wall.
Not
here.
Even no. Like at all. He's Kurt,
no. I have thought. I have
he's an average
that,
white
Mike.
Male. Go ahead.
I've got it, Mike. I feel like I don't disagree, but I think that for me the season was really actually I didn't mind the back half of the season, but I got really frustrated with the last two episodes leading into the finale. Like, I thought that the way that they burned Amar was really kind of BS, as we covered extensively, and then I feel like it's just such a weird final too. You know, it's a really yep. strange situation where neither Marjorie nor Isaac is in there. And maybe that is like my character preference as well showing. But I really felt that that's what the season was building toward, was one of those two. And I had a lot personally riding on that, not just because I'd hitched my wagon to Antonio's team, but also because those were the two that I liked the best by far. So it was really unsatisfying. And like, I went into this finale wanting Amar to win, but it was like the lesser of two evils. And that's not a knock against Amar. It's more a knock against, I don't like Last Chance Kitchen as a concept. I don't want to see LCK winners win the season, but he was the lesser of two evils for me. But it was really just until these last few episodes that I was starting to feel really burned by this season. But it burned me enough that I wouldn't say I'm thumbs down on the season, but it ended on a dark note for me. It was definitely a bummer ending for me, and I would pick Top Chef Boston every single day of the week over this season, just based on the outcome, and I think that makes a really big difference.
Yeah, Katie Beth Austin had a good tweet where we talked a little bit about this, where she said it seemed odd that for their big return to Cali season, they wouldn't have had a more dramatic finale like Seattle with a live show, and we talked a little bit about the finale staging, why Vegas was there, the first season, all of it being tied in there. But I have to say, I was a little let down, not necessarily by the result of the last few challenges, but maybe by the design and just kind of by the location. I think the getting the send off for Fleur de Lis was awesome. I think it was terrible that a chef was eliminated for toast ultimately. And yeah, there's a cook off after that. But I think it's awful that someone's eliminated before getting to participate in that, who, especially since it's Amar, who really would have been something that would have been not only great television, but who truly would have appreciated that in their life and in their career. It would have been a key moment. I just think that to take someone out on toast, I know toast is an artisanal thing in San Fran. I didn't like that. I also really didn't love some of the Last Chance Kitchen things that were going on at the same time with the teppanyaki table. We talked about that on the podcast here. Some of these things that were happening, I just wasn't the biggest fan of. The double restaurant wars, I think it actually played out okay, but we didn't have an elimination after the lunch. And so I'm not sure that the right person ultimately went home for restaurant wars. Did the person who cooked the worst dish go home? Maybe. Or the person who conceptualized that. But did the person who did the most poor work overall that day go home? No. I'm wondering if Jeremy shouldn't have gone home at restaurant
Right, exactly.
Wars.
Like, if they had had a lunchtime elimination, he probably would have gone.
Right.
Yeah, and it's also interesting because I do feel like if you go back to our past podcast, I feel like that middle streak where Jeremy finished in the bottom a couple times, we all at times made the argument of Jeremy should have gone home over Philip. Jeremy should have gone home over Karen. Jeremy should have gone home over Kwame. So what also kind of leads a sour taste in my mouth, in addition to my personal just dislike of Jeremy's personality, is the fact that he got very, very lucky in this back half, in my opinion, which again sort of sours the second half of the season to me.
Yeah, and this happened with New Orleans. Nicholas is like bottom, 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 four in a row. Then he wins, and then in the final four to go through to the final two, and then he wins the finale. But he's bottom four in a row, and he's not even top the one before that. So it's like he has a long streak of should have gone home for sure by the fourth time, and he escapes and escapes and escapes and escapes and then wins the season. So it is not that bad. And as you talked about the stats overall for Jeremy, he's still in the top four in terms of consistency in the season of anyone who's ever won the show. So you can't really say, you know, Jeremy should have gone home or whatever, but there are specific episodes where maybe it should have happened. And that's why it's difficult. Even though his quality was good across the board, that Restaurant Wars thing is just a major thorn in the side for me, because he made the decision at lunch to put the judges' food out first. It screwed up their whole service. It screwed up Kwame's job. It screwed up the prep time that they had for the second service, which screwed up the second service and screwed up everything that came after it. Was Philip's strawberry dish poorly conceived? Yes. Was Philip up his own ass? Absolutely. Was the, you know, Bangkok delicious a dumb idea? Tom certainly thought so. But that doesn't change the fact that Jeremy made this bad chef choice. Yeah, it was dangerous. Bangkok dangerous, not Bangkok delicious or anything else. It was all these things. So I don't know. That part of the season was frustrating to me. I still a good night. I still think it's a very good season because I really liked Isaac. I really liked Marjorie. I really liked Kwame. I really liked, I came to like Carl. Like, I really liked some of these people that were on this season that had great moments. And so for me, that's what it really comes down to. Padma was her usual self. She was making great little snippy remarks throughout. She was beautiful. Tom's handsome eyes were, you know, prevalent throughout the competition, shining overall. Like, I just think this is a great, great season in terms of
not enough Gale.
No, and that's rough. Who was
said,
it? Was it?
I thought you said kale, like the ingredient.
Yeah, plenty of Gale.
Enough Gale. That was when Max Dawson assimilated into Antonio's body. Yeah,
Amar is kissing Gale at the finale, and he says, "This is what I've been waiting for all season." It's like, you didn't win, buddy. And I'm thinking, yeah, but he's kissing Gale, so I guess he's feeling pretty good about this.
God. I ship Amar and Gale.
Yeah, bring them back. You're shipping Amar and Gale. What would their couple name be, Mike? A male? You're
a
shipping
male.
A male. I got it. All right. You shouldn't ship male. You should mail.
I'm married, Antonio. I'm married. I'm not shipping a male.
You should mail, Mike. You shouldn't ship it. But yeah, this is it's done. This is Top Chef. It doesn't always work out the way we want it to, guys. Top Chef is life. Top Chef is love. Doesn't always end up the way it should, right? Am I crying? I don't know. Maybe.
Oh, God.
Kurt, what are your thoughts about the season?
I'm trying to come up with a completely non sequitur response again.
Yeah,
talk
Kurt
to me
is
more
killing
about
it.
Grayson, Kurt.
So until she... Yeah, no. You know what? It was... I mean, there was... I think the consensus is the end result, but the road that we got there was amazing. It was like... I don't know, the opposite of, you know, taking a trip to Vegas. It's like, you know, instead of going through the desert to get to this really spectacular, you know, place of light and sound, you have the journey that's really amazing, but then the actual destination was a little bit so-so. So it's almost you want to hit the, can we hit the road again for another like 12 episodes and have an unsatisfying 13th episode? I'm hoping so. I mean, obviously you'd love to have like a great journey followed by a great destination, but a great journey followed by a so-so destination is, you know, much better than, you know, 13 episodes or so of complete, you know, dislike. So I'm okay with it and how it turned out, but it would, you know, definitely wasn't my favorite season, but we had some strong competition along the way.
This is basically the equivalent of the movie Vacation, right? We had all these wacky yes. misadventures on the road. We get to Wally World and it's closed. And we just have to think about the time we had instead rather than the end result. And I do agree with you, Kurt. I do think the journey, and especially talking with you guys about said journey, definitely sort of overpowers the general distaste of the ending.
That said, I mean, that those final contestants in Boston, like, there wasn't a single one that you would have been furious if that person won.
Absolutely. That final three is amazing in Boston.
Yeah.
Anything else about this season, guys? I've wiped my tears away. I'm ready. I think we've said our final eulogies. Any other questions or anything else before we put this candle out?
Sure. I've got a question. What about Charleston? What's that going to look like? What's good about that as a location for the next season of Top Chef? Because I know very little bit about it.
Yeah. Antonio, you're a resident Southerner. Do you have any insight as to South Carolina and Charleston specifically?
Well, I resemble that remark. No, I've been to Charleston before. I love it. Has anyone ever been to Savannah or anyone familiar with Savannah? Charleston and Savannah are very similar. Wouldn't shock me if they kind of take day trips from Charleston, because that's a thing that people do in Charleston. And if you take a day trip from Charleston, you can end up in a lot of different places throughout that area. It is a gorgeous kind of antebellum kind of town. That's the Savannah connection. And that's a lot. that's a little weird for a lot of reasons. It's a very much a Civil War kind of connection kind of thing. Savannah is not far away in Georgia. Hilton Head is not far away in the island. There's obviously seafood forward kind of things, but the antebellum connection can't be ignored. It's in the architecture. It's in everything that's going on. And it will be, you know, Top Chef, I'm sure, will handle that with the deft touch that they usually handle every other major issue with. Like having Native Americans' relatives sit down at a Thanksgiving dinner where the relatives of the pilgrims can break bread with them. This is the Top Chef that has brought us that sort of thing. So I have no idea. There were also those race-based shootings in Charleston not too long ago. So I don't know.
I was in Columbia recently, had some good barbecue. I'm not sure how representative Columbia is of the rest of South Carolina, including Charleston. I think from some of the conversations we had, Antonio, I think you'd say that maybe Charleston is a little bit more representative, but
Columbia is a gated, half gated community, half non, very the opposite of that. And there's a lot of disparity in Columbia. Not that there isn't in Charleston. Charleston and Savannah both have this sort of very kind of unique, beautiful antebellum kind of core with a lot of negative energy surrounding the core, which, you know, the sort of thing that happened with the shooting. It's really hard to ignore. I'm sure the city of Charleston, which was a huge tourist city, suffered as a result of that shooting and was one of the cities that was lining up to give Top Chef the kind of tax breaks they want to shoot in their city, to shoot the show in their city. I don't know exactly what, where they're going to end up. Like I said, they could easily trip down the coast and go to Savannah. They could end up in Hilton Head at the resort kind of areas that are there. They could go up to Myrtle Beach and cook on the dirty strip in Myrtle Beach, which would be amazing. So a lot of the places that are down there in the Atlantic coast are kind of fascinating. There were people like me when you grow up in Kentucky go on vacation. And so you just, everybody in the Cincinnati area has been to Hilton Head or Myrtle Beach or Charleston or Savannah or somewhere there on the coast. And so I think that there, but the thing is, there's a lot of great food in all those cities, Myrtle Beach excluded. So I think that Charleston, Myrtle Beach is corn dogs and funnel cakes, but
which is like perfect for like one episode though.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. If you could airbrush food, then Myrtle Beach, if you could airbrush food, find a way to airbrush your flavors onto a plate. That would be what you do. Myrtle Beach is all airbrush and carny and strip and skee ball. Charleston and motorcycles.
Skee ball for ingredients. Do it.
Yeah. Or have a caricature artist draw you in some sort of situation and then make a dish based on that situation that your caricature represents.
Yes, so they could go to Myrtle Beach for a day. I could see it. Then when they did Top Chef Texas, they went all over Texas. When they did, I don't know about Savannah. Savannah's in a different state in Georgia, so I don't know about your tax credits there. But if South Carolina, if Charleston's game, I got to think Hilton Head and Myrtle are in play. So it wouldn't shock me to see them end up in either of those places. And they're very different. Different kind of feels in both of those, you know, kind of areas. So there's a lot that they can do there. South Carolina is fascinating. There's a lot of seafood, but there's a lot of Southern cooking. Hugh Atchison will have a lot to say. Hopefully we'll get more of the Huni Brow there in that season. I'm looking forward to it. Of all the cities I would have said Top Chef could go, Charleston wouldn't have been top 20. But like I said, I'm sure they're eager to get more business there after the horrible things that have happened in recent times. I'm just curious what kind of deft touch Top Chef will use here, if at all.
Yeah, they'll have to blur out all the Confederate flags that might be showing around the city, unless they got taken down by now, hopefully. So yeah. Hopefully they'll be able to sort of glance over that situation that happened earlier last year.
Yeah, and it's a fascinating kind of decision that Top Chef has made, and we'll see it play out. It'll be gorgeous, and I mean they'll maybe do a ghost tour. That's a little more popular in Savannah, but it's something that Charleston has as well. So that would be pretty cool. I think Kurt, I think you'd be in for some sort of paranormal theme Top Chef challenge. It sounds right up your alley.
My mind's already spinning. I'm like, wait, what? Let's see, ghost tour, resurrect a rotten fruit into something that's actually edible. No,
that sounds like resurrecting an old dead recipe is something Jason would have loved from this season. So it's too bad.
soft on soft.
Yes, maybe he'll
cook like the Mesopotamians.
Yes, it's supposed to eat that way. I don't know. Like, but anyway, so there are some great possibilities there. The Civil War will be mentioned. Like, these things are going to come up, and Top Chef will have to figure out a way to handle it. Look, Top Chef, when they had the big gay wedding this season, they thought they were doing this like magnificently forward-thinking progressive thing. And they shot it before the decision in Obergefell that basically made gay marriage legal everywhere. They shot it thinking this is our big statement. We're gonna marry everybody and say everybody should be married. And then gay marriage was legalized, and Top Chef had filmed this political forward episode that ended up not really invoking politics at all, and ended up seeing a little bit passe. I'm terrified at thinking what their best foot forward is going to look like in Charleston. I'm really terrified, especially considering who the heck knows who's going to be president in this country when that season of Top Chef airs. But it could be look. But set your watches, fellas. We'll be back next year.
Oh, yeah, and this has been, I just say overall, this has been really awesome to, you know, I'm happy that we were able to do episodic recaps this season. I know last year we kind of did it in big chunks, but I love talking with the three of you guys about anything, let alone Top Chef. This has been a lot of fun, some of the most fun I've had podcasting. Thanks to everyone who listened out there as well, who followed us. Some of, again, as Antonio pointed out, some of you may not even watch the show and followed us, so we're really appreciative of that and your feedback all season long.
Yeah, I really appreciate that too, and really big shout out to Scott St. Pierre doing the heavy lifting behind the scenes to cut out the things that make us seem, all the things that we're not, that we say out of the side of our mouth, like, you know, I don't know, just things like that that you want to cut out of a final product.
Go easy, everybody.
Yeah, but no, seriously, shout out to Scott St. Pierre. He's the unsung, but now here sung, and sung as much as possible, hero of what we do here on so many of our podcasts at Rob Has a Website. So thank you very much to Scott for all the hard work this year. And I just want to say thank you to you guys for all the stuff that we've brought to the table. This has been really fun for me as well.
It's been a good time.
Hooray. Thank you. I echo those sentiments, and great job driving the bus, Antonio. You did a fantastic job.
No yelling on the bus.
And if for some reason you guys aren't tuned into post show recaps and you want to, you know, listen to the four of us in other capacities on a weekly basis, we're all there doing stuff on a variety of capacities. And if anyone out there is going to be at the Live Survivor Know-It-Alls next month, I believe all four of us will be there as well. So come find us and talk about how much you vehemently agree or disagree with anything we've said for the past 15 weeks.
But yeah, only approach us if you agree.
Anybody else? Kurt, any final thoughts?
You know, and I'm just really considering this whole Grayson returning thing. I think, again, I think it's stop. Like they, okay, I'll stop. No, it's
hashtag Grayson vacation has to happen.
Yes. Okay. If you want to use that, is that the hashtag Grayson vacation? Yes.
I've got pasta Tama. I've got
holiday road.
Nothing about Hung, Kurt. We're leaving that out.
I had Hung question mark because I didn't think I think we're leaving that out. First loser is always a fun one.
No, hashtag Grayson vacation. And feel free to tweet at Grayson and let her know you'd like to go on vacation with her. No, don't do that.
Well, this podcast is going on Grayson vacation until Top Chef returns.
It is. Until Top Chef returns with Carl, shaved beard, as Grayson wig in Charleston next year. Maybe we'll just see what Carl's up to before then, but probably not. But anyway, thank you very much for tuning in throughout the year. We're all very grateful, and I'm very grateful for every one of you. By that, I mean the three of you and everyone listening. Thank you and goodbye.